legal writing, we talked about the different types of legal issues and the different types of arguments that you can make related to those legal issues. So let's go ahead and start with what we already know. Well, we know that there are fact-based issues, and then what we don't know is, well, at least what we haven't discussed up until this point, was that there were law-based issues. We recognize that when we read cases, but let's just talk about fact-based issues, and then we'll get into law-based issues and the arguments that we can make for each. A fact-based issue is pretty much as we were talking last semester, where all the issues are based on the fact. You have a client set of fact patterns, and your goal is to convince the court that the past cases answer your client's fact patterns in a certain way, and you're trying to come up with a legal remedy for those facts. And you make those three different arguments that we talked about, where you have a rule-based reasoning, where the law is already decided and you're applying it directly. You have analogical reasoning, where you're looking at different cases and the fact patterns there, and you're trying to match it all up with your client's facts. And then you've got policy considerations to determine what may or may not be effective use of social moral impact. How would this rule impact not only our case, but other cases? In predictive writing, this works really well. We use this to predict a result, and then we can actually transfer it into persuasive writing by using these same arguments, but framing them in a persuasive manner, which is kind of what we talked about yesterday. Law-based issues, on the other hand, are when a piece of the law is still unresolved. And most of the time, the law is resolved, and so you get law-based issues presented a lot less frequently. But ultimately, what it means is the law has not been resolved, and before we can apply it to a client fact pattern, we need to resolve the law first. Any parts of the law that are unclear need to be cleared up. Any parts of the law that have yet to be defined need to be defined. And that's really a big part of what the courts end up doing. And to determine what the law should say, ultimately, there are four kind of things that we look at to determine what this means. We look at the text of the law, we look at the intent, we look at the precedent, and we also consider policy considerations. So let's get into each of these more in depth. So the text, there's actually three ways that you can interpret the text. You can look at the plain language. That means you're really pulling up a dictionary and you're saying, okay, what does this say? What does this word mean? And you interpret it specifically as it is there. Then you have the canon of construction, which is one way of just looking at how the parts of the law were formed, constructed, and then you use certain tools and to actually interpret its meaning by making inferences. So an example of this is you're going to be looking at the ordinary meaning of the text. So for example, if you think of the word individual, most people think of the word individual and they think of a singular person, not a corporation or a different governing body. And then you have intratextual, and this just means that you're looking at a different part of the text to interpret the part of the text that you're trying to resolve. So that's text. Next we have intent, and legislative intent is one of the things that we look for. We're trying to look at the legislative history, their debates, what they talked about to determine what they actually wanted to occur with the law. So if there's an issue in unclarity, well, then you can look at what the legislature wanted and maybe that'll clear things up. So that's intent, and those are arguments that we can make there. Third, we have precedent. And so this is different from the fact-based things that we talked about, where with the fact-based things, we're looking at past cases of already settled law. But when we're talking about it for precedent for a legal-based issue, well, then we're seeing what other courts have said about this law. For example, if a circuit in Circuit 1 ruled this way and a circuit in Circuit 3 ruled this way, well, and then should Circuit 5 rule the way Circuit 1 did or the way Circuit 3 did? And they're going to look at the arguments that those circuits make to make up their mind. Those what precedent is arguments are made up of. And then finally, we have policy arguments. And there are four subsections in the policy arguments as well. We've got normative arguments, economic arguments, institutional competency arguments, and judicial administration arguments. We're really just trying to figure out what would be a good result moving forward and avoid bad results moving forward. So normative arguments are where we look at the societal values. What societal values do we want to protect or portray? And we're going to make our arguments based on receiving a positive societal benefit. Economic arguments refer to the idea that a particular ruling will either benefit or hinder economic progress. Institutional competency is making arguments saying this case should not be heard before the judicial courts, before the judiciary. Instead, it should be heard in front of a legislative body. So you're saying the courts, in this case, are not authorized to hear this kind of thing because the Constitution doesn't give them that authority. And as a result, this should be heard in front of a different body. And then finally, we have judicial administration arguments. And these are arguments where you're presenting material to say, if you ruled this way, then the courts are going to be bogged down with a certain number of cases. It's going to make it very difficult to make future rulings. And so that's another policy consideration. So that was a lot of information in a very short period of time. Ultimately, we've got two different styles of issues. We've got fact-based issues and we've got law-based issues. Fact-based issues work really well and for both predictive and persuasive, but it works really well with the predictive in the sense of you can still use guiding factors to outline the fact patterns to determine what court ruling should be. And then you've got law-based issues, which are laws that have not been decided yet. For text, you can look at the plain language, the canon of construction, and intertextual meanings to decipher the meaning. Then you've got intent, you've got precedent, you've got policy, and within policy there are four other subsections, such as normative arguments, economic arguments, institutional competency arguments, and judicial administration arguments. That's a sum up of everything, but I do want to look at this big picture, because that was a whole lot of information, and to rather, instead of overwhelm, I hope to simplify. The way to simplify it, if you think about it this way, is picture a case is going to trial. There's a part of the law that has not been decided yet, and so it gets appealed up to the Court of Appeals. And the issue at the Court of Appeals is to try and figure out the meaning of that law. Well, that's really what you're trying to do. How do we interpret that meaning? And we can pick and choose all these arguments that I just listed from, text, intent, precedent, policy. We can pick and choose from all those main categories or even those subcategories in those categories to form how we want to shape our argument to the Court of Appeals in this situation. So, for example, say our first paragraph in our brief that we want to write addresses the issue that we have. Say the next paragraph that we want to write says the plain language of this issue is clear. We want this ruling. So the next issue talks about what Circuit Court 1 did. The next paragraph talks about what Circuit Court 3 did. And then you conclude saying you should rule this way because if you don't, well, then bad things are going to happen. And that's really what we're trying to do with a law-based argument. And that's a good synopsis, I hope, of how this persuasive writing should work throughout the semester. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join Law Schoolers Pro. And you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't are pre-law materials, and the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice, and with that, the fourth thing is if it is used as legal advice, we are not liable, that is, law scholars is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.